So we are holding on Lamatessa base, three lines from the bottom. So the Mishnah had talked about what constitutes about well the Mishnah had talked about the different possibilities as far as if the machzik is in one place and the owner of the property is in a different place, can it be a valid machar or not? Or we discussed yesterday, we had the Tanakama saying that if the owner of the property is in a different land, in a different country, for example, in the Galil versus Yehuda, then it doesn't work. And then Rabbi Yehuda had said that the whole reason for the chazakah of 3 years is that even if the guy is out in Spain, there'll still be 3 years will be enough time for the news to reach him and for him to come back and do a machar. Which led us into a discussion yesterday, therefore, of whether we're saying, whether the Tanakama and or Rabbi Yehuda, what are they saying as far as does the machar have to actually be in the presence of the machzik or not? Are we saying that if it's not, are we saying that only if it's in his presence is it a valid machar? And or are we saying that even if you were to do the machar in some other country, it would still be valid? So now we're going to revisit that today after we start talking about first what exactly constitutes machar. That's where we're holding. Hechidami machar. What exactly constitutes a machar? Now, the Rashbam explains, we're talking specifically if it's shaloi b'fano. If we assume, as we discussed yesterday, and as we're going to discuss again today, that machar shaloi b'fano can be valid, what exactly, because if it's in his presence, you don't need any particular lashon, then whatever you do in order to make it obvious that he's there illegally. In fact, the Rashbam points out, we had earlier in the perek that there can be a case where you sell the field to somebody else during the time when this other guy is claiming shnei chazaka, and that's enough even without saying anything. So, but if you're doing it shaloi b'fano, what exactly is the lashon that needs to be done to constitute a machar? Amar Zvid. If you start by, before we start the Gemara, you were supposed to remind me. Yes.
I thought at the end of the Gemara.
No. But we may as well talk about it now because actually it refers to something we learned yesterday. I'll do that before we get into the Gemara itself. Okay. We learned yesterday, we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel on the question of if somebody runs away, Bereach, is it possible to make a chazaka on his property or not? And we ended up saying, we had two different lashonis of it. We ended up saying also there's a distinction. Why did he run away? Was it he ran away machmas mamoin? In that case, fine. He owes somebody money over here. He doesn't have any problem, though, people knowing where he is. Therefore, if he's not moicha where he is, assuming that machal shalav upon him is valid, which is what we said yesterday, then tough luck on him. On the other hand, if he was bereach machmas merodin, if he ran away because, for example, he killed somebody, then he's afraid to have anybody know where he is, therefore he may well not have done a machal for that reason, and therefore you can't make a valid chazaka on his property. So, the Yerushalmi points out in this connection an interesting thing. You have a short story in Sefer Melachim that goes like this. We all know the story of the Isha Shunamis, the one who she and her husband were childless for many years until Elisha gives them a bracha, gives them a nevuah that they're going to have a son. That son is a few years old, he has sunstroke or whatever it is, he dies, she takes him home. To make a long story short, Elisha is Mechayim. That's her Parshas Vayera. I think everybody here knows the story. Well, there's a sequel to it, which is much less well known. And that goes like this. Elisha tells the same lady, the Isha Shunamis, there's going to be a famine coming in Eretz Yisrael. It's going to last for 7 years. So you and your family leave the country, find someplace else safe to live during that period. So they go and they move to the land of Plishtim and live there for the next 7 years. She comes back at the end of the 7 years, the famine is over, and she finds that her property has been taken over by other people. So she goes to complain to the king. This is the king of the Aseret HaShavatim, Yehoram his name was. Just then, Yehoram is standing around talking with Gehazi. And Gehazi is telling him Rebbe Shemaitis, is telling him stories of the various nisim that Elisha did, including being Machayim Esim, the Isha Shunamis' son. Just then, who should appear but her? So, and her son. Gehazi says, Adoni HaMelech, you see this family that I was talking about, this is them. So she makes her complaint, and the king orders one of his officers to go and get back restitution and get back her land and her house and whatever to her.
So she wasn't able to do a machal.
So that's the thing. So the Yerushalmi says, well, if we said yesterday that you're able to make a valid machal not a valid machal, if you're able to make a valid chazaka on the mechasim of a bereach, like we said yesterday, Shmuel holds, and even Rav, according to one lashon, holds that way also, that can be proved from this pasuk. Because you see, why is she going to the king? Why isn't she going to Beis Din? Why isn't she going to Beis Din? Obviously, the implication is Beis Din couldn't do anything because it's 7 years already. You should have done macha. You're not a bereach machmas merodin. You had no problem people knowing that you're an eretz plishtim. You didn't. Tough luck. On the other hand, she can go to the king and find the king can override. Machmas mammon or whatever it is. The point is, it's not bereach machmas merodin.
Famine?
Because of the famine, yeah. But yeah. The point is, it's not bereach machmas merodin. It's not like she has to keep secret where she's living.
Yeah. Okay.
Now,
who was the king again?
The king is Yehoram.
Yehoram.
Now, though, there are a couple of other interesting nuances to this, though, because first of all, the Malbim understands it differently. He says that he doesn't even mention what the Yerushalmi mentions on that, so maybe he disagreed with that understanding, I don't know. Whatever, he explains Faket. She was living in the land of Plishtim, he says. You can see from other Pesukim in Divrei Hayomim that at that time there was a state of war between Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Plishtim. Well, then it was Kishas Cheron Gomim. And as we said yesterday, if it's not Shayoros Mitzuyas, people are not going back and forth, then you're not expected to do a macha anyway, because your macha is anyway not going to reach the other person, therefore no chazaka. Therefore, the king... So he doesn't explain why she had to go to the king instead of going to the Beis Din, but okay.
Maybe she went to the king instead of the Beis Din.
Yeah, it would have been that she sold it or whatever, yeah. Yeah, that she sold it and we lost the shower, yeah, whatever. But that's the thing. According to the Malbim, in principle, she could have gone to Beis Din just as well, because since it was a Shas Cherum, then her machal wouldn't have reached them anyway. Then there's a couple of interesting things. The Chassam Sofer has yet another take on the whole story. He says he explains on that Yerushalmi, it's not even a question of Chazaka in that story of it. It's rather a different situation. What happens? We know from the original story of the Ishash and Amis, her husband was old and they had been childless for many years. They had already given up hope of ever having children until Elisha comes and gives her the nevuah that she's going to have a son. So what happens? Now they went off to Eretz Plishtim for 7 years. Meanwhile, apparently her husband passed away. We don't hear of her husband in the next story. We only hear of her and her son. So Bepashtus then, he says, so what may have happened is that the people who took over the property were actually her husband's relatives, her husband's Yershim. They would have argued like this. Look, your husband died. He didn't. You're saying you have a son? Come on. You guys were childless for so many years. This is really your son? Come on. You picked up some foundling from the streets or whatever over there. So therefore, their claim is that it's a matter of years. It's not even a matter of you sold it to us or whatever. It's a matter of your husband died without any, It's a matter of your husband died without any heirs. Without any children, therefore it goes to us, his brothers, or no, we're going to learn in the 8th parak, we're going to learn about the dinim of Yerusha, that it goes first to a person's children,
not
and if
American
not, if there's no children, then it goes to his brothers, or their descendants, and if not, then it goes one generation. It doesn't. I mean, if you want to leave her something, give them to hey. But there's no specific thing where
she's penniless.
We learned in Ksuba. She's entitled to Mizonis. She's entitled to Ksuba or whatever, but she doesn't get... No, she has. It's called Moder Amana. That's a different thing. The Amana is entitled to continue living in the same house that she lived in while her husband was alive. So fine, but in this case, they've been living in Eretz Plishtim for 7 years. Anyway, so he says, so that's the verse. So they figured, her husband's dead. He didn't leave any Yoshim. You have a son? Come on, that's not really your son. It's some kid you picked up off the street you're claiming is your son. So what happens now? Gehazi is standing over there together with the king and telling him, what?
If she was pregnant at the time?
No, it doesn't matter. They're saying no. She never had a child. This is not their own. This is not her and her husband's child. This is an adopted child. So what happens though? Gehazi is speaking to Yehoram and telling him about the story of Elisha being Mechaya Nesim. Well, you have to realize from that the Eved doesn't do Nesim for no reason. Why would the Eved do the Nesim of Tchias Nesim? Because this really is their son, the one that Elisha promised them. Well, then there you go. So she does have a son. Well, in that case, then the other Yoshim's claim falls apart, and then she's entitled to the house and the field again.
I like that.
Yeah. Then the Chassam says yet another possibility. Then he says yet another possibility. Fine, maybe those other relatives agreed that the son really is her and her husband's son. But they argued, okay, but he died, and then came back alive again. See, it's amazing. So it's a whole new thing. You can't consider that he's the rightful heir. And then, so he says actually that what happened is that Gehazi and the king don't necessarily believe in Elisha's nisim. They don't necessarily believe that there was really Tchefa Mason over here. They consider that the kid was alive the whole time. Maybe he just fainted or whatever. And therefore, they said that won't fly. But anyway,
can you take that in consideration?
No, well, that's a whole different question.
So Gehazi was not considering in this.
So according to that last explanation, Gehazi himself didn't really believe. We see in the original story also, when Elisha sends him with a stick to be Mechayim Esim, the kid, that he's making fun of on the way. He's telling everybody, Elisha tells him, don't tell anybody that where you're going and what you're doing. But he doesn't. He's telling everybody, look at this, Elisha, my Rebbe sent me with a stick to be Mechayim Esim. You think a stick can be Mechayim Esim? Yeah. That's why it didn't work, indeed. That's why Elisha himself had to come. Yeah. So we see that Gehazi himself was not such a believer. We'll learn in Sanhedrin, Beth Hashem. We'll have a whole studio about him in Sanhedrin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a number of things.
Oh, well, but Solomon's going to be in somewhere else.
He became a Metzora eventually. So what is the king doing talking with him? As long as they're outside a walled city, but Hashem isn't allowed. I don't know. They weren't standing in the city necessarily. Because there's a couple of reasons. One of them, the straightforward reason in the Pesukim is because after Naaman was healed from his tzaraas and Elisha didn't want to take anything for it, Gehazi ended up taking something for it instead. So Elisha tells him, you want something from Gehazi, fine, you can have his tzaraas. The Gemara also explains there's another reason also because he also swore Shavuot Sheker at the time. That we'll get to in Erchin, that's a shame. But anyway, so those are a number of different takes on that little story over there in Malachim about the Isha Shunamis and what happened with her property, a number of different approaches, what exactly happened over here and how it fits with the dinim of Chazaka that we're living here. Okay, now to the Gemara. Heichi Dami Macha. What exactly constitutes a Macha? If the guy says the Shaloi B'fanav, right, again, says B'fanav, it's whatever, yeah. But Shaloi B'fanav, Amar Rav Zvid, if you only say Pliny Gazlonav, if you only say Pliny is a Gazlon, Loi Hav Yemacha, then that's not a valid Macha, because that's not a reason for him to be careful with his Shtar. The guy's calling me a Gazlon. What does he have a reason to call me a Gazlon for? How is he even supposed to know that he means specifically about this property or whatever, that he should have to be careful with his Shtar? Or the Rashbam brings another explanation from Rav Yaakov ben Yachar that the other reason is, because if he just says Pliny Gazlonav, fine, let's say I know you're talking about this property. But still, you're not saying anything that you're planning to take it to based in or whatever. So he's found he's just trash talking me or whatever. That's no reason that I should.
Let's talk about the property or the.
So that's great. So we're going to see there's three elements of what Rav Zvid talked about, and we're going to see Mephoshim discuss which ones of those three are the key ones. Let's learn the whole statement. So if you just say Tlanya Gazlonahu Loi Havya Macha, then that's not a valid Macha, because the guy, A, the guy doesn't know what you're saying you're Gazlon for, and second of all, even if he has some idea, he has every reason to think that you're spam trash-talking him and not saying anything serious. On the other hand, if you say Tlanya Gazlonahu, if you say Pliny is a Gazlon, then knock it Lola Aroi the Gazlonusa, because he is holding on to my land as Gezel, because I didn't sell it to him, Ulamacha to Vina Lebedina, and eventually I plan to take him to Basin and sue him to get it back, have your macha. Then that constitutes a valid macha. So now,
what do you have to call him a gazlan for macha to be?
So here's the thing. So a number of different Rishonim talk about different possibilities. What exactly is important in the statement over here? Mm-hmm. Rabbeinu Hananel, so first of all, the Rashbam quotes Rabbeinu Hananel, you must say that last part, I plan to take him to Beis Din.
Yeah.
If you only say the first two parts, he's a Gazlan and he's in my land illegally, that only amounts to you're just trash talking him. You're not actually giving over Aegis that to say that you intend that this is something that you're making a macha and therefore he better hold on to his staff. But that's the thing. So according to Rabbeinu Hananel, you actually have to say that phrase is the key. Lamacha tavayna lebedina. That phrase is the key that eventually I plan to take. Eventually I plan to take him to Beis Din. On the other hand, the Rashbam then goes on to quote Rabbi Yaakov ben Yochar, who says that it's not so important to mention that I plan to take him to Beis Din. The important thing is that you say that he is holding on to this land, the Gazlonos, he has to actually say both things. He has to say Pliny is a Gazlon and he's holding on to this land, the Gazlonos. Because
if he's holding the land, because
if you were to say he's holding on to, so other Rishonim explain, because if you were only to say he's holding on to my land because Lanus, not necessarily are you saying that his title to the land itself is bad. It could mean, for example, the Ritzvah explains, you could mean, for example, just he's holding on to my land because Lanus, because there's other money that he owes me from some unrelated transaction where he's supposed to have given me this land and payment of it, and he's not. Only if you say both, Pliny is a Gazlan and he's holding on to my land because Lanus, then you're making it clear that I don't have any other objection against him except for this one that he's holding on to this land illegally.
So then you couldn't say that without saying Gazlan.
But that's the thing. In order to, if you only say the nothing like that,
he's holding to my land because Lanus.
No, but if you only say that, that's what the Ritva argues, is that then the other guy can say, well, okay, I didn't realize he meant that my title to the land is in question. I thought he meant that there's some other reason why he feels that I'm a Gazlan. Because he claims that I was supposed to be giving him this land in payment of some other debt or whatever, but not that my original title to the land is in question.
Second, if someone says someone, then the guy says, well, I actually have a star and show space.
Sure, if he has a star, okay, then he's good.
Right.
Of course.
Like, why you have to tell him, hold on.
No, but he was saying after 3 years, normally after 3 years, a person is not expected to hold on to his shtar. But once there was a valid macha, then we say you're supposed to hold on. A macha is an objection. That's what
like
we're saying.
When?
Sometime during the 3 years. That we're going to see later in the Gemara how often that's
feels. Show his shtar.
If he still has his shtar, sure. But the assumption is that so during the 3 years, the guy is going to do a macha. The news of the macha may not even reach him after 3 years. No, the news of the macha will reach him during the 3 years, but that will put him on notice. You better hold on to your shtar. Don't think that at the end of 3 years you can throw away your shtar. Tosfos also talks about that you don't have that you don't have to say that I'm planning to take him to Beis Din. As long as you're saying he's a Gazlan and he's in my land illegally, then that's valid. You have the different opinions among the Rishonim themselves. Actually, the Rambam understands it not only like Rabbeinu Hanano that you specifically have to say I'm taking him to Beis Din, but the Rambam goes even further. Even for example, we've talked about before cases where you have a macha that's not really because the guy's not there illegally; he's there for a legal purpose. For example, you sold him the payrus, or there's a mashkanta or whatever. We've talked about before you have to do a macha. According to the Rambam, you still have to mention in that macha also, if the guy, you have to say in your macha, the guy is there, for example, now legally fine because I sold him the payrus or whatever it is. However, if he should ever claim that he is here because I sold him the field, then I plan to take him to Beis Din. You actually have to include that detail, according to the Rambam, in order for it to be a valid macha. And that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. How about what happens if the person does a macha, but then he says to the edim that he said it in front of them, don't tell him this macha? Why would he want to do that? I don't know, but whatever. He wants to do a self-macha, kind of.
Maybe he doesn't want him to get ready for the Beis Din.
Maybe. That could be. So what's the din? What would be the din? Is that a valid macha? Amr of Zvid, Sir Zvid says, no. He says, don't tell him. How is the macha supposed to reach him? On the other hand, Rapapa says, no, because he only said, don't tell him, implying the day like Tamerulay. All that means is he's saying, don't tell him directly. Lachrini Imrulu, but he's not telling them you can't tell other people. And again, Chavra Chavra Islay. News will spread around from one person to another, so it doesn't matter even if he said, don't tell him.
Right.
And therefore that works. And that's the halacha.
Could be
the
even though
the funner. Again, if it's funner, obviously there's something to talk about. We're talking about shaloi b'funner. Another case. What about omru lei loy amrin lei? What about the other way around? What if the ma'arer doesn't say anything? He doesn't mind it being told directly to the ma'asik. But let's say the edim themselves volunteer and say we're not going to tell him. What's the din there? Omru zvid haka omru lei loy amrin lei. So Rizvid says, same problem then. They said we're not going to tell him. Therefore, again, how is it going to reach him? How is it going to reach him? And again, Rapapa Omer, same idea. L'diday le'amrin and le'. Fine. All they meant was we're not going to tell him directly. However, l'achrini amrilu. However, they still will feel free to tell it to other people. And again, chavra chavra islay, v'chavra v'chavra chavra islay, and therefore it'll still work. How about another case? Amalhu le'tepuk l'chushutha. What about if he says, So not he says don't tell him. What if he says I don't want a word to come out of your mouths about this, which implies not to him, not to anybody else. What about then? So the Rizvid says, well, in that case, for sure, there's nothing to talk about. He said, not a word of it should leave your lips. In that case, you can't say, well, they're going to have a loophole that they can tell other people. Obviously, it means that's it. They can't tell anybody, and therefore, that's not a valid macha. What about Amru Lay Lay Matkinen Shusa? But what about if
everybody agrees with that?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, the Rosh actually isn't even Gurdas over here Amru Zvid, because he says not necessarily.
Right,
if
right.
If Rav Zvid said before that even if he tells them, don't tell him, it's no good, how much more so if he says don't tell anyone? Yeah, so that's accepted. What about another case? Amru Lay Lay Matkinen Shusa. What about if they volunteer and say, we're not going to tell anybody, we're not going to let a word go out of our mouth? So now the Papa, who was Makel in all the other cases, and said it's a valid macha, he says, but over here, you can't consider it a valid macha. They said, we're not going to tell, so then they're not going to tell. How is it going to get out? However, Rav Huna, Breidir of Yeshua, you can't. They said they're not going to tell either. However, Rav Huna, Breidir of Yeshua, Amar, no. I disagree. In that case, even then, it can still get out. Even then, it can still be considered a macha, a valid macha. It will still get out because Kol Milsa de Le Ramya Le De Inish, anything which is not a requirement on a person, he may well say it without thinking about it. In other words, like this, it's not like they took a shvua in Beis Din or anything like that, or they did a tiskaf, they did a kinyan or whatever. They just said that, it's not a nether, it's not a nothing. They said, we're not going to tell anybody. Fine, but it's not incumbent on them to not. So therefore, they're likely to eventually...
They'll come home and they'll say, oh, you know what happened to
them? Yeah, they're likely to let it slip.
Why did they talk about it being today?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Why do you have mud on your shoes?
By the way, this concept, Kol Milsa Delav Rami Alei De'inish, has more general applicability also. The Gemara in Shavuos mentions it in another connection, for example. Imagine you have Reuben takes Shimon to Beis Din and says that I lent you $100 in New York on such and such a date. And Shimon says, I've never been in New York. Now, what happens if Adim come and say that Shimon at some point was in New York? They didn't see the actual transaction. All they can say is, we saw Shimon in New York on a certain day. Does that mean that we found him to be a liar? No, because again, Kol Milsa de Lo Rami Alei De'inish, it's not important to him really whether he was in New York or not. The important thing is, did he borrow $100 or not? The fact that he it may well slip his mind that at some point he was in New York, and therefore that can't be considered to be contradicting the agent. So that's another example of this concept that when it's not something that's essential or something that's incumbent on a person, then yeah, a person may well forget it. So the same thing over here, the agent are not expected to remember that they voluntarily said we're not going to tell it, and therefore they're likely to tell it at some point or other. So the moral of the story is, if somebody tells you, I'll keep this a secret.
You know,
don't trust
only,
that necessarily.
Especially
yeah.
Your wife.
Yeah, come on. Okay. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Macha Shalei B'Fanav Havya Macha. Okay. So now getting back to the concept of Macha Shalei B'Fanav, Rav Nachman, Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman that a Macha Shalei B'Fanav is a valid Macha. Again, going back to the discussion that we had yesterday between Rav and Shmuel about that point. However, now that Rava said that in the name of Rav Nachman, but he argues on it, he asks on it. Eisvei Rava lo Rav Nachman. We said in the Mishnah, Amr Rav Yehuda, like Amr Shalish Shanim. Rav Yehuda says in our Mishnah that the only reason why the Chachamim established the term of Chazaka as being 3 years, Elikadesh Spamia, Yaksik Shana, only so that even if the other guy, even if the owner of the property is in Spain, the Yaksik Shana, the Machzik can be having Chazaka on the land for 1 year, the Yehuchol Yadi'ur Shana, it'll take another year for people to come and tell the guy in Espanya that somebody is being Machzik in his property, the Yavil Shana Acheres, and then he's going to come back that third year and do the Macha. The question is, if you're going to tell me that a Macha Shalei B'Fanav is a valid Macha, Lomalei L'Meisi, why does the guy have to schlep all the way back from Spain to Eretz Yisrael to do the Macha? Let him just stay there in Spain and do his Macha there. Now, the obvious question which the Rashbam and all the other Rishonim ask is, okay, that's Rabbi Huda in the Mishnah. The halacha is not like Rabbi Huda. The halacha is like the Chachamim. Why is that? The Chachamim don't say this whole business about Aspamia. They say Yehuda v'Golil. This concept over here about the guy being Aspamia is from Rabbi Huda. Fine. Why doesn't Rabbi Nachman just answer very simple? Why doesn't Rabbi Nachman just answer very simple? You're asking me, according to Rabbi Huda, the halacha isn't like Rabbi Huda. So, the various Rishonim give a couple of different approaches what Rava means by this. The Rashbam starts by saying that maybe Rava may have understood the Chachamim in our Mishnah differently. He may have understood it that the Chachamim in our Mishnah are talking about a different, are giving a different angle on it. So the Rashbam doesn't elaborate what that other angle is. The Marsha explains like this. Rabbi Yehuda is saying explicitly in the Mishnah that if you want your macha to be a valid macha, you are going to have to come all the way back from Spain to Eretz Yisrael. The Chachamim, fine, they disagree with that, but why is that? Not necessarily is it because the Chachamim argue that you can do a macha wherever you are. The Chachamim may argue that, fine, we're not going to be matriach you to come all the way from Spain or even from the Galil back to where your land is in order to be Mecha. If you have a situation where the Macha is not easily going to reach the Machzik, then fine, you're not obligated to do a Macha in the first place. Therefore, the Chazaka can't be a valid Chazaka, because you can only have a valid Chazaka where the other guy is able to do a Macha, which is going to reach you. That's the reason behind why the Chachamim said in the Mishnah that if one is in Yehuda and the other is in the Galil, it doesn't work because the Macha is not necessarily going to cross the border anyway, and therefore the Chazaka is to begin with, not a Chazaka. So in other words, Marsha understands the Rashbam to be saying the Chachamim of the Mishnah may well agree that the only valid Macha is one that is in the presence of the Machzik. The difference is, Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that even if you're in some other country, if you want to prevent that chazaka from taking place, you are going to have to come back overseas and do that macha in person. And the Chachamim disagree with that. They say we're not going to be matriya.
But they, how are they going to accept the macha?
So that's the thing. They wouldn't. They would say that if you're overseas, you're not obligated to come back. But because you're not obligated to come back, therefore the chazaka can't be a valid chazaka in the first place. In other words, they would agree, though, with the basic concept that if the macha is not b'fanav, then it's not a macha.
Right.
So therefore, so Rava is asking from Rabbi Yehuda only because the question is, that's the question. In other words, if the owner of the property is overseas, do the Chachamim say that the chazaka could be a valid chazaka? Therefore, if you want to prevent that, you better come back and do your macha in person. That would be Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas the Chachamim would disagree and say that no, in that case, the Chachamim aren't going to be matriach you to come back. Therefore, you can stay where you are, but the Chazaka won't be a valid Chazaka.
They could say, we want matriach you, but send a Shliach, and it will be a Chazaka.
You can't send a Shliach. The Pashtos, you have to do it yourself. But anyway, that's not, the Chachamim didn't say anything about a Shliach. The Chachamim didn't say anything about having to send a shliach. The understanding of it would be that the Chachamim would be saying that if you're in another province or another country or whatever, you're not obligated to come back to be Moshe. Why not?
Why
because
of
the Chazaka.
Straightforward, it's not a Chazaka.
That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. If one is in Yehuda and the other is in the Galil, it's not a valid Chazaka. That's exactly what they're saying in the Mishnah. Why would it not be a valid Chazaka? Because the only way to make it, the only way to prevent it from being, the only way for you to make a Machal would be to come back in person, and they're not going to be Matriyachim. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is talking about coming all the way back from Spain, so obviously he would hold that we are Matriyachim. So that would be one way of understanding it, and therefore, so Rava is asking from Rabbi Yehuda because Rabbi Yehuda is making it clearer by mentioning this business about coming back from Spain. But the Chachamim would agree with the underlying idea that a Machah Shalai B'Fanav is not a valid Machah, and therefore that's Rava's question to Rav Nachman. Tosfos has a different understanding of it, which is that Rava is under the impression that wherever news of the Chazaka reaches, news of the Machah is also going to reach. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim and the Mishnah may simply be arguing on the actual fact. Is news of the Macha going to reach all the way from Yehuda to Galil, or all the way from Eretz Yisrael to Spain, or not?
Maybe the news were allowed to reach because the circumstances allowed, and then after they reached, there were circumstances that did not.
Okay, but so if a new Shas Chirim develops, that's different, but we're talking about if circumstances are the same the whole time. So Rava is under the impression that wherever the Macha is heard, the Chazaka will also be heard. So therefore, just as Rabbi Yehuda, yeah, obviously, well, that's what we're talking about. Yeah, ceteris paribus, as they say in economics, keeping everything else the same. Yeah. So the same way as Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that even if you did Chazaka and Yehuda, the other guy can be expected to hear about it all the way from Spain, the same thing Macha can be done. And yet Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that it's not even good enough to come back to the same country. You actually have to come back the Yachzer Shana, the Pashtos, to the same to do it in person. And again, the Chachamim would agree with that basic underlying concept. They would just say that you don't. They would just say the news of the chazaka is not going to reach overseas. The news of the chazaka is not even going to reach from Yehuda to Galus. And therefore the guy.
I mean, we're talking about before the Galus and
now, but again, they're obviously arguing the Mishnah. Anyway, so that's the question, therefore. So we see, however we understand it exactly, we see that evidently that we refer to and the Chachamim in the Mishnah, both are saying that you need Machal Bafanav. So then, what are you talking about? Machal Shalev Bafanav is Machal. The answer is, Hosam Eitz HaTovah Kamash Malon. Fine. The Mishnah is not necessarily saying, Rabbi Yehuda, and implicitly the Chachamim, when he talks about returning to do the Machal, he's not necessarily saying you have to because otherwise it won't be a valid Machal. He may just be giving you good advice. The Nasiv Nishkal Aro Peri. You would do well, as soon as you hear about the situation, to come back from Spain or wherever you are and take back over the land and take the Peris, because otherwise the other guy is going to take the Peris, and you're going to have a harder time getting him back.
Right.
So not necessarily is Rabbi Yehuda saying you must come over here. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda may well say, fine, you can do your Machal in Spain if you want to, but you would do better to come back to Eretz Yisrael and then take care of the situation in person. So the question is, mitkamoisiv leRava leRav Nachman. Okay, if we're saying that Rava is asking Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman started by saying Machal Shalev Afanav is a Machal. Rava is asking on this, which implicitly implies Miklal deLeSvirul leDe Machal Shalev Afanav Havi Machal, implying that Rava himself disagrees with that because of his understanding of the Mishnah.
Yep.
The problem is, we learned yesterday in the sugya of Rav and Shmuel that Rava said that Machal Shalev Afanav is Machal. So what is it? What does Rava himself hold? The answer is Bosa, the Shama Mirav Nachman Sabra. Yes, what happened is, he originally had the question, he disagreed with Rav Nachman, after Rav Nachman clarified to him that the Mishnah is not necessarily taking a stand one way or the other on Machal Shalev Afanav or not, Rav Yehuda is giving us just Eitz HaTovah, then Rava accepted that answer, and therefore he came to understand the Mishnah differently, and that Machal Shalev Afanav is a valid Machal. But yes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could have stayed in Spain and done your Machal over there. According to the Chachamim, if you're in the Galil and you hear about it, you could do your Machal over there.
But it's better to do it
in person. So it is a valid Machal Shalev Afanav. And that's it. Okay.
And that's the conclusion?
And that's the conclusion, yeah. Okay.
Are we going to do Lashon Hara too?
Yeah, we're going to get there in a couple of lines. Okay. One time Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina met the Talmidim of Rabbi Yechanan. Amalahu, mi amar Rabbi Yechanan machal b'kama? So he asks them, did Rabbi Yechanan ever tell us how many people you need to do machal in front of? So the answer is yes. Rabbi Chiyah ba'aba amar Rabbi Yechanan machal b'kne shnayim. Rabbi Abba amar Rabbi Yechanan machal b'kne shloisha. Two Talmidim of Rabbi Yechanan disagreed on what he said. Rabbi Chiyah ba'aba said that Rabbi Yechanan said it only needs to be done in the presence of two. And Rabbi Bo reported that Rabbi Yechanan said it needs to be done in the presence of three. Okay. Maybe one time he said two, maybe one time. I don't know. Anyway. Okay. The question is, Lema b'dirava b'rav huna k'mifligi. Should we say then that Rabbi Chiyah ba'aba and Rabbi Bo are arguing that their underlying argument has to do with the statement of Rabbi b'rav huna? So I'm a Rabbi b'rav huna. Name me like this. Rabbi Barav Huna says a general din as follows in the halachas of Lashon Hara. Kol milsa, there you go, we are getting to it. Kol milsa de misamra ba'afet plasa, anything that is said in the presence of three people, less from mishum lishna bishna. There is no issue of Lashon Hara. Lishna bishna means Lashon Hara. No, bishna is the Aramaic word for bad. So lishna bishna is an exact translation of Lashon Hara. So, should we assume, therefore, that so maybe then we should assume that Rabbi Chiyah Ba'aba, who said that you only need two people, he would disagree with Rabbi Barav Huna. He would say even two people is enough, because the whole point Machal is supposed to be something. It's supposed to be milsav David in Leiluy. It's supposed to be something that eventually is going to be known.
Bisha is Aramaic for the Hebrew word busha.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
A dog is a fish.
Yeah, okay. Okay. So, if we take the view of Rabbi Barav Huna that you need three people to know something before it doesn't become Lashon Hara, in other words, because once three people know of something that's already publicized, then it would mean you need three people for the Machal. Two wouldn't be enough. On the other hand, if Rabbi Chiyah Ba'aba is saying that all you need is two, Evidently, it means he disagrees with Rabbi Barahona.
Maybe just so, for
Lashonara. Okay, so before we get to the answer, we have to discuss what exactly is the connection. First of all, what's the connection between our case and Machal over here and Lashonara? And second of all, what exactly does this mean, this concept of saying that if something is known by three people, it's not Lashonara? You hear people saying that occasionally, but what does it actually mean? So,
50 people to know it.
Listen, first of all, okay. So the Rashbam starts by explaining, like we said, that the connection, the reason why the Gemara is bringing in this concept of Lashon Hara is not because the Macha itself constitutes Lashon Hara, but because we're drawing a parallel between them. Just as once something is known by three people, then everybody knows it, and therefore it can't be considered Lashon Hara, with the details that we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, what that means. The same way with the Macha, once three people know about it, then already we know it's going to get spread on, and eventually it'll reach the masses. Then Rashbam brings an explanation from his Rebbeim, which he disagrees with, but actually we find this explanation in Rabbeinu Gershom as well, that the Macha itself is, to a certain extent, Lashon Hara. But what are you saying that he said at the beginning of the sugya? What is Macha? You're saying this guy is a gazla and he's in my land illegally, so therefore there really is that direct connection, therefore. So we would say that according to Rav Bar Avuna, if you say it in front of two people, it'll be considered Lashon Hara. Those two people will not be allowed to tell it to anybody else, and therefore news of it will never reach the master. As opposed to, if you say it in front of three people, then already it's not considered Lashon Hara, so then eventually it can be spread on and eventually reach the master. So again, Rabbeinu Gershom says that, the Rashbam quotes it from his Rebbeim. He says, I don't like that explanation, because he says, Fakir, the Macha is not Lashon Hara. The Macha has, the other Rabbi, he says, it would be a mitzvah to pass on the information, because the whole point is the Macha is to put the maksik on notice. You bought this land legally, very nice. You better hold on to your shtar, because one day this guy is going to show up and claim that he never validly sold the property to you or whatever. So you better hold on to your shtar. It's not a matter of Lashon Hara.
Like Gedalia had news and he thought it was Lashon Hara, but it really wasn't Lashon Hara.
There's that, yeah. Okay, so it may or may not be, but you have to inform the Machzik that this guy is saying this, and therefore, if the matter ever comes to Beis Din, you'll have your shtar, you'll have your agent, you'll have your whatever, and you'll prove that the guy Taka is lying after all. But you, the listeners, can't know whether it's true or not. You're responsible, says the Rashbam Adarav. You're responsible for continuing to spread on the fact that this Macha was made in order that it should eventually reach the Machzik, and so he'll know to take precautions. Yeah. Okay, so now what do we mean by this business about if three people know of it? There's a few different explanations. The Rashbam over here, and also the Rambam, understand it basically at face value. If you have something, even shognai, the Rashbam said, even if it's something derogatory about somebody else, but it was already said in front of three people, and then you're going to turn around and go tell the original person, the original subject of it, such and such is being said about you, that would not be considered Lashon Hara. It wouldn't be considered Rechilus or Lashon Hara. Why? Because once three people know about it. Why? Because, again, once three people know about it, it's already publicized, and therefore we can assume that it's eventually going to reach back to him anyway, and therefore it wouldn't be Lashon Hara. Let's first go through the different opinions, and then
that's
we'll talk about one. That's the Rashbam. Also, the Rambam holds much the same way, except the Rambam, it seems, holds a little bit differently as far as the detail of whether you can tell the original person it was told about. The Rambam seems to say that not. But other than that, his basic understanding of this Kol Milsidi, Sama Ba'apakwasa, is basically the same as Rashbam.
So you cannot tell the original.
You cannot tell the original person, right. Tosfos has a whole different explanation of it, which is that we're not talking about something which is outright Lashon Hara at all. Tosfos says it briefly over here. They say it in more detail in Erchin. The Gemara in Erchin, there's a sugi in Erchin over there about Lashon Hara. So the Gemara explains over there, sometimes you have statements which in and of themselves are innocuous, but they could mean something good or something not. The Gemara gives an example over there. Let's say, for example, you say about somebody, he always has a fire going in his house. Now, there's two possibilities. You could be saying that he's a generous guy, he's always baking bread for the aniyim or whatever, or you could be saying he's a glutton, he's always preparing food in his house, he's a stresser, yeah. So what is it? It's ambiguous. But if three people don't know of it, If three people, don't know, but the Tosfos explains like this. If it's something that you wouldn't say in front of three people because you're afraid it's going to get back to that person, then obviously you're saying it as Lashon Hara. Don't be saying it. However, if you're prepared to say it in front of three people, meaning that you yourself know that your intentions with it are good, and you won't mind if the guy hears that you said this, because he'll also know that you meant it well, that it's not Lashon Hara.
Basically,
because your intentions are good, and the guy will know that your intentions are good.
If you always say things as if the guy is going to find out.
So Tosfos quotes, quotes.
You can have good intentions that are causing a lot of harm.
But
you can have evil intentions.
You can make mistakes in life.
Right, So Tosfos quotes over here from a Gemara also there in Erechin, I believe it's also in Shabbos, where Rabbi Yossi says, "La'olam lo yamarti dover chazarti la'achorim," meaning, I never said something and then had to turn around to see if the guy I'm talking about is there. Meaning that if you're saying it in a way where you wouldn't be embarrassed for the person you're talking about to know that you said this, then it's fine. Then you're not saying it as Lashon Hara. Whereas if you would be embarrassed,
maybe you think you would be embarrassed, and he would think he would be embarrassed.
If you think he would be embarrassed,
no,
you're not.
If you think he would not be embarrassed, nevertheless, he would think he could be embarrassed.
But that's the question. In other words, would you put it this way? Would you feel that afterwards you could face this guy after having if you feel you can't, then it is Lashon Hara. But if you know that what you're saying is for good, has a valid reason behind it, and you know that the other guy is going to take it that way, and therefore you won't be embarrassed for him to hear that you said this. In other words, you're ready to say it in front of three people, not being concerned with the blowback that he's going to find out that you said it and feel and get angry at you. Then it means it's not Lashon Hara. Then that's the different definition. It's not Lashon Hara. That's Tosfos' explanation. And then,
anything that harms somebody is
not harm. But it's not going to harm somebody. That's the point.
Your intentions are good.
Your intentions are, and you know that the other guy is going to know your intentions. You know the guy. You know that if word gets back to him that you said he always had a fire burning in his house, you know that he's not going to think that you're accusing him of being a glutton. He knows that you mean it.
Maybe some others will.
It doesn't matter others. The point is.
Well, let's say you have a friend and he's good at playing pool. And see, say this guy's a good pool player. You're always playing pool with him. But let's say you have a friend and he's a rabbi and he's always giving shiur and they say he's a good pool player. That's Lashon Hara. But if it's your friend and you play with him,
not if you had good intentions.
Would you have any reason to think that the guy would hold it against you for having said this? If yes, then it's Lashon Hara. If not, then not. That's Tosfos' point. And then there's yet another explanation. Rashi over there says in Erechin that we're not necessarily talking about something which is Lashon Hara at all. We're talking about the guy tells you something which is supposed to be kept in confidence. Normally you're not allowed to tell somebody else's secrets, but if he told you in front of three people, obviously he himself doesn't care about keeping it a secret. So that's yet another explanation.
According to the Rashbam, I'm allowed to ask about Lashon Hara if it's been said about me if it's been said in front of three people. But according to the Rambam, not.
It seems so, right. Now, so the Chofetz Chaim, naturally enough, talks about this extensively in his Sefer. And he says, basically, so actually, the Alter Rebbe actually brings both the opinions of the Rambam and of Tosfos, both understandings of it. But anyway, the Chofetz Chaim talks about, fine, the Rambam's explanation is basically accepted by halacha. However, there are some caveats. First of all, since you have the Rambam and the Rashbam argue about this point of telling the original guy, then you can't do that. But he says there's a number of other caveats also. One interesting one, he says, if any of the original three people are Yirei Shemayim, are the type not to say Lashon Hara, then you can't assume it's going to get known by everybody. The whole heter is because once three people know of it, it's inevitably going to spread. But if you have the people themselves are careful about Lashon Hara, it's not inevitably going to spread.
It was heard in front of a base in a very reputable judge.
Also true. He says a couple of other things also, for example, you would have to tell over exactly what you heard. You can't embellish it in any way. And there's a couple of other caveats. Practically speaking, it's not so simple, but in principle, yes. Okay.
Why is there no simon in the Shulchan Aruch?
There is, actually. You can find the basic dinim of it are in Aruch Chaim, Simon Kuknun Vav. So in the big Shulchan Aruch, it's only very briefly. It's Hilchos Maaseh Umatzeh. But in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, for example, it's explained in greater detail.
Of all the chapters, Kuknun Vav.
Kuknun Vav, yeah.
Kana.
In our time, right after the dinim of davening or whatever, before the dinim of eating, comes the Hilchos Talmud Torah briefly and Seder Masa Omasa, the Seder of how a person goes about their daily business. Well, a person's daily business includes having to be careful about the chilos and lashon hara. Yeah. Okay.
So, if you know a guy wouldn't care, but it's still lashon hara.
No, so according to Tosfos, it can't be something which is objectively ignat. It can't be something which is objectively bad about him. It could only work according to Tosfos with one of those things which could be said in a good way or a bad way, like he has fire and now it's burning in his house or whatever.
What if our analysis to be?
What if what?
Everyone knows what if he's fat.
Okay. So maybe that's something that's known by three people. I don't know. Okay. I forgot to mention also that Amman points out another caveat in it. You're allowed to say it, but not if you're specifically intending to spread it further. So like if it comes up in the course of conversation, fine, but not where you're deliberately trying to spread it further. That's another caveat as well. See. Okay. All right, getting back to the Gemara over here. So we have the question then. Should we say that, Rav Bar Rav Huna mentioned three people in connection with Lashon Hara. Does that mean that if we say the Machal needs to be in front of three people, then that agrees with him? And if we say the Machal needs to be only in front of two people, then that would disagree with him? The answer is Loi. Dekula Alma Islu de Rav Bar Rav Huna. Loi meaning no, you don't have to understand their machlokas that way, that they're arguing on Rav Bar Rav Huna. They could both Rav Chiya Bar Abba, who said two, and Rav Abahu, who said three, in the case of Machal, both of them could agree as far as the din of Lashon Hara with Rav Bar Rav Huna.
On
the issue of that if it's known by three people. Rather, we could say that the machlokas between Rav Chiya Bar Abba and Rav Abahu is on another point. Manda Omer b'fnei shnayim, Rav Chiya Bar Abba, who says that all you need is two, Kasabar, he figures machal shalei b'fon of loy havi machal. That a machal that's not in the presence of the machzik is not considered a machal. So therefore, so in other words, the machal has to be b'fon of. Well, if it has to be b'fon of, all you need is two edim. You need edim afterwards because you need some kind of proof that you actually did that machal. Otherwise, the guy can always deny it later. But all you need is two edim. Or Manda Amr Fne Gimel, where's Rabbi Bohu, who says that he needs three, Kasava, Machal Shalei B'Fonav, Havi Machal, he could hold that a Machal Shalei B'Fonav is a valid Machal, therefore you need three, because once, again, you need three in order to start spreading the news, because it wasn't B'Fonav, so therefore without three, the news
three
is not,
enough.
Three is enough, to, because that's what Rabbi Barahona was saying, two is not enough, but if it was B'Fonav, all you need is two for eight.
So therefore
it's still compatible. A couple of the Rishonim, the Rimigash and the Raibed, and some others have a gear to the other way around, actually, who say that if we say two, they could argue that Machal Shalei B'Fonav is a valid Machal, and if you need three,
two people is enough to spread.
Not that they say two people is enough to spread, but they would say that if you have two people, then fine. It may have been Shalei B'Fonav, but fine, they're Eidim. They can go and give Eidim that there was Machal.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say you need three, that would amount to saying that you need B'Fonav, because, in other words, they would say it's true, it doesn't have to be exactly B'Fonav, it doesn't have to be in front of him, but at least if it's going to be Shalei B'Fonav, it has to be in the presence of three in order for it to be valid. Ibai Sema, or another way of looking at it, Dekula Alma Machal Shalei B'Fonav Havi Machal, you could answer that maybe both Rav Abahu and Rav Chiya Bar Abba both hold that a machal shalei b'fonav is a valid machal. So not like the previous explanation that we said that they're arguing over that thing. Maybe they both agree it is a valid machal, even shalei b'fonav. The machlokas rather can be as follows. Manda amu b'fnei beis, Rav Chiya Bar Abba, who says you need only two sava sadusa b'yinen. He says that all you need for the purpose of a machal is you need edus. You need edus. So there, in other words, Tosfos says not the matter of spreading around. All you need is edus. Two is enough for edus. In fact, Tosfos says, I mean, if it weren't for that, if you didn't need edus, all you need is one. Chavra chavra, it can start spreading even from one person.
Yeah.
But because at Lashon Hara, you have Lashon Hara is hidden from people. You need three people to spread it. Something like this, a macha is not meant to be hidden. So one person would be enough. But because you need edus, therefore you need two people.
Whereas the one who says to be,
he holds you need something where it's going to be where the whole world is going to know about it. So once you have three, then like Rabbi Barapona said, once three know about it, then the whole world knows about it.
So we'll have the same explanation previously.
But it's not really, because we're talking about whether it's Bafanov or Shalai Bafanov. He would say, we agree that it can be Shalai Bafanov, but even if it's Shalai Bafanov, you might only need two for ages. Or you might need three, because if it's Shalai Bafanov, you need the whole world to know about it.
What's the halacha?
The halacha is that what is the halacha actually? The halacha is that you need two. The halacha is you only need two. You only need two.
For ages.
No, if it's Bafanov, you need two. But Shalai Bafanov also. Shalai Bafanov also. Either way, you only need two. Yeah.
For Aedim.
Yeah.
So they're going to say, oh, this guy made a macha, we're the Aedim, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
And you just have to make a statement saying that he's a gazman.
You have to say, well, so again, we have the different Rishonim who argue what statement you have to make. You definitely have to say, according to the Rambam, that I'm taking him to Beis Din. And you also have to say what the claim is, that he's in my land illegally. Yeah.
And that's the halacha?
Yeah.
I would say all three of them now, just in case.
It's probably best to be safe, yeah. Okay, all right.
Just in case you have anybody.
New topic within the dinim of Chazal. The Gemara tells a case like this. Gidol Baman Yumi, Havalei Mechuyot Sila Mechuy. Gidol Baman Yumi, that was his name, he was one of the Amoraim. He once had a situation where he needed to make a macha. Somebody was holding on to his land illegally, he needed to make a macha. So he found these three chachamim sitting together, Dehavu Yasvi, Umacha Kamayim, and he did a macha in front of them. Which doesn't mean, by the way, that you need three. It's two are enough, we said. It so happened that all three of them were here.
That was the first thing to bring.
Okay. Lashana, the next year, Hadar Asal Machoy, he came back to be Moicha again. The guy was still holding on to the property. He hadn't had a chance to take him to Basin yet, so he comes back to be Moicha again. Amrulay, they tell him like Tzrichas, you don't need to. Hachi Amar Rav, because you should know, Rav said the din, Kivin Shemicha Shana Rishana Shuvan Itzarach Limchais. Once you did the Macha the first year, you don't have to do a Macha again.
We said
wouldn't he take
that's
him
we're
going to
get to, right? You would think, but maybe he didn't have a chance to, I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever.
In some cases, you have to do it every year.
Hold on, no, you don't, no, there's no case.
Every 3 years.
Hold on, we're going to get to that.
Every 3 years.
That's what we're going to get to in this piece of Gemara over here, is where we're going to talk about it. Okay. So now on that, Rish Lakish says in the name of Bakapara, that Tzorech Limcha is the Seif called Gimel V'Gimel. Now you do have to make a macha at the end of every 3 years. See, that's it. Yes, you made a macha the first year. You don't have to make a macha the next year, but within 3 years, you have to do another macha. And the reason is, the Rashbam brings two possible reasons. The reason which he likes is for the same reason we've been saying throughout the whole parak. After 3 years, the person doesn't necessarily hold on to his shtar. After 3 years, he has the ability to claim that I originally bought it. Fine, the guy was moicha in the beginning, but he never took me to Beis Din, so I never had a chance to do anything about that macha. But I really did buy it. I've since lost 3 years of past since his last macha. I've lost my shtar. Then the Rashbam brings another explanation, which he disagrees with, which is that the guy shouldn't be able to argue, fine, you were moicha. At that point, you hadn't sold it to me yet. At that point, I had it illegally or whatever. But later on, you sold it to me. The Rashbam says that doesn't work. You have to have that. If you're claiming that you originally took it over illegally, how do you have the ability to say afterwards that I bought it from you without some kind of proof? Okay. So therefore, okay. Tohi bar Rabbi Yechanan. However, Rabbi Yechanan wondered at that or checked into that. V'chi gazlan yesh lechazaka. Why should you need to be moicha within every 3 years? Does a gazlan have chazaka? Once you establish with your first macha that he's a
gazlan,
so the question is, the gemara asks right back. Gazlan, what do you mean he's a gazlan? You don't need proof. You don't need proof that he's a gazlan. El a kid gazlan yesh le chazaka. No, rather what Rabbi Yochanan is asking is, fine, he's not literally a gazlan necessarily. He is arguing a hadashtar, but at least you're arguing that you're claiming that it's as if he's a gazlan. You made a coil start developing about him that he's a gazlan. Shouldn't he be responsible to hold on to his shtar? Now, does that mean that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with Bar Kapara? So or not? So the Rashbam says no. The Rashbam says he's not arguing with him. He had respect for Bakapara. He's not going to argue with him. He's just wondering at the basis of the halacha. But the halacha, in fact, should be like Bakapara. Tosfos, on the other hand, says maybe not. Because, you remember, we had the case earlier in the Masechta where somebody claimed he had a chazaka, where somebody may have claimed that he had a chazaka for 6 years, but we said that's not good enough because somebody else has a shtar, they bought the land 4 years ago, and we said, Ein lecha macha gdol mizu. The point is, we don't see that you needed to make another macha within 6 years, or twice 3 years. We don't see that you had to make an extra macha. So therefore, Tosfos says, on that basis, the halacha may not be like Bakapara. The halacha may, in fact, be like Rabbi Yochanan. The Tosfos says the halacha is like, it must be like Rabbi Yochanan, that once you made a machal the one time and established at least to your satisfaction that the guy is a gadlan, then yes, he's responsible to hold on to his shtar as long as it takes until the matter comes to Beis Din. On the other hand, the Rashbam doesn't necessarily have to agree with that because the Rashbam held in that earlier Gemara that having a shtar is even stronger than a regular machal. As long as the other guy's shtar that he bought the land 4 years ago exists, then that is considered a constant, ongoing macha, and therefore you don't need another one. Normally, yes, you would need a new macha within every 3 years. But when you have somebody else, when you have the ma'ariv himself has a shtar saying, I bought this X number of years ago, and he still has that shtar in his possession, then you wouldn't need another macha. So according to the Rashbam, that has no bearing on our Gemara over here, and therefore the halacha may well be like a part over here. You still do need to renew your ear every 3 years.
You would.
Yeah. That you would need to renew your macha within every 3 years.
Oh no, but what about having a shtar? Does that mean?
If the mastic has a shtar, obviously there's nothing to talk about. We're not talking about that. That case that we had earlier in the Perek was that the ma'arev.
You're in my field. I'm the ma'arev, and I have a shtar.
I have a shtar that you, the ma'arev, have a shtar that you bought it, for example, 4 years ago.
Yes.
And now 6 years have passed. 6 years have passed, and you're claiming that you have chazaka. But you don't, because I have a shtar of 4 years. Obviously, what happened is you took over the field illegally. 2 years after you took it over, the owner of the field himself went and sold it to me, thereby establishing a macha. And now, since I have that shtar in my possession, then that shows that's an ongoing thing showing that you're here illegally. And you can't have established chazaka unless you have a shtar of your own. So the Rashbam would understand it that way, and therefore he'd say it's no contradiction to Bar Kapara saying over here that you need macha every 3 years. Where Tosfos understands it differently.
It's an over star against the newer star, right? Or it's no star versus a star. That you don't need every 3 years.
According to the Rashbam, no. According to Tosfos, regardless, you always, even if the star is... The halacha, so pretty much all the poskim do accept the Rashbam's statement that in fact the halacha is like Bakapara,
that you do need to
renew it every 3 years unless the other guy has a shtar which stands in place of a mahal.